Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Jumping horny toads! That fur-bearing varmint done stole me coffee! Need another!
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require money. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy Sam a coffee via the coffee.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material needs. Special thanks go to our first coffee angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha. Except those wishing to remain anonymous, benefactors will be announced in the final credits. And thank you truly for listening.
Lockpins out!
Lift the gate!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 20.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Here we continue Chapter 18.
Can you do it?
Calron glared expectantly at the dwarfen blacksmith who was inspecting his wrist shackles. After a quiet night within the village's tall gates, and while the early morning stars still sparkled, he sought out the first Ravenpoint forge heated for the day.
Wouldn't see why not. I have some tools and a pair of soft iron snips that should do the job.
Then do it!
He was impatient with the stunt's doddering manner. The dark-eyed dwarf met Calron's white-blue eyes evenly.
And what will you trade for this service? I won't take fire powder like the others did.
Narrowing his icy gaze, the mage cursed Laune's miserliness. The Archduke had flatly refused to give him any money, then held up the lining of his riding cloak and felt for a flat, smooth, round stone he had secreted in there.
Feel this, blacksmith. 'Tis a lump of silver. My last.
The dwarf rubbed the cloth-covered lump carefully, gauged its weight, and nodded.
If you can get these things off my wrists, that silver is yours.
Satisfied, the lump of silver was sufficient.
All right, rest your shackles on that anvil there, son.
Then proceeded to work on the hinges and clasps with different tools. When it was obvious he had made little progress, if any, he tried cutting through the iron with his metal cutting shears, but no matter how much pressure he put behind them, the blades merely stopped on the shackles and made little more than tiny dents. His worst fears confirmed, Calron lost patience with the procedure, but restrained himself from venting anger on the blacksmith. Not only was Raven Point the finest weapons forge in the Old Kingdom, there were more than enough heavily armed dwarves in the village to overcome him if this one called for help. Regretfully and unaware of Calron's fury, the blacksmith scratched his beard.
Well, sorry, lad, but short of firing them in the forge and melting them down, I can't help you.
That's obvious.
He stormed out of the shed. Outside, he discovered it was well into the morning. He had to be moving on, crossing territory as quickly as possible. The chance of his encountering former cohorts who might carry resentment toward him was too great. Turning his back on the blacksmith, who stood in the doorway and shook his head with befuddlement, Calron checked his steed, saddle, tack, and provision packs. He ignored the polite waves from the cheery dwarves at the gates as he went past. That same morning, Gawain told his companions what he had seen in his crystal, as well as some of his plans for preparation. The giants were now tracking them, as Gawain and companions tracked Calron. And though the grunts had failed in their surprise attack, their tenacity in more attempts was expected. It was well known that mountain men easily held grudges, even to the point of their own demise, one of the many reasons the brutes were avoided at all costs. The one bright note for the day was that they expected to reach Raven Point before sun's down, thus safety for the night. The dwarves had constructed their village with stone walls as high as a keep's, like a wedge between the two southernmost foothills of the Ridgewest Mountains, making it unassailable. The group's journey progressed quietly through the morning, the weather pleasant, the road clear. During the stop for their midday meal, however, a chill sound keened on the wind and set the horses to shuffling anxiously. It soon stopped, however, and would have been ignored had Gawain not scried for the mountain men again, remembering they sometimes bred large hounds like the ones that nearly attacked them in the dragon cave. His intuition proved correct, the crystal showing the giants with leashed hounds straining on their bonds as they eagerly followed a scent somewhere in a forest. Wary of the impending hunt, the party hastened onward to Raven Point. It was when the first sun had disappeared below the horizon that they came upon a small pile of rubble beside the road, a smashed road marker that would have told the remaining dragon lengths to Raven Point. They knew they were relatively close to the settlement, at least, the approaching landscape dominated by the two foothills where it was nestled, and they would have pressed on except for the threat of being waylaid in the advancing darkness. The group decided to implement one of Gawain's plans and appear to set up camp for the night. While Clough set up the trip line, then kept lookout from a high tree branch, the group unsaddled their horses, laid out bedrolls, and built a fire. Gon and Thasgar set to emptying some of the packs and filling them with leaves, then draped traveling cloaks on them, shaped them as best they could, and propped them up with sticks around the fire, making them look like dozing travelers. Their steeds were taken to the other side of the road, where they remained hidden deep in the woods. Once the mock campsite was completed, everyone took up watch positions on the other side of the road, while wet leaves were tossed onto the fire to make smoke and thereby cue their predators of their supposed whereabouts. Then, like all warriors ready for an impending fight, they waited, quiet and vigilant. The even was full upon them when the eager wolfhounds trumpeted their discovery.
How many do you think will try this time? Not enough. We're ready for them now.
Thasgar notched an arrow into his bow and continued scanning the darkening shadows that danced around the fire across the way. Out of the night sprang four great hounds the size of ponies, their large yellow teeth gnashing and frothing as they found the source of the scent. Two of them tripped over the line that otherwise were unhindered, and in the next instant, they ripped into the packs propped around the fire of the mock campsite, sending a spray of leaves and dirt in all directions. One mountain man arrived and saw the fake camp with his beasts worrying at lumps of cloth. He brought his cudgel down hard into the fire, scattering flaming embers in all directions.
Zah!
Throwing his voice, the enchanter commanded stop in the mountain man's native tongue. The giant turned his head this way and that in a futile attempt to locate the source of the command.
Where you be?
With the aid of his cloak, Gawain was invisible. He stood directly behind the giant and his hounds, deliberately downwind, and continued manipulating his voice around the destroyed campsite.
Why do you hunt us?
He was mildly surprised he could understand the brute. When did they start speaking the vulgar tongue? And where are the other three? The giant glared into the woods around him while his hounds whimpered and sniffed confusedly, their noses full of the smoke and unable to pick out any one scent.
Where you be? Don't like ghosts.
I don't like ugly brutes who attack like cowards.
Gawain was feeling confident with his deception despite the towering two-man-high figure standing right before him. Scowling furiously, the mountain man thumped the ground with his cudgel.
I kill you!
Then turned around slowly, eyes piercing the shadows that started to flicker as some of the scattered campfire found new fuel to burn in the trampled underbrush.
Go home! You find only your death here!
He swung his cudgel around him with all his might, breaking several small trees in two. Clough signaled the others,
ha!
And arrows flew into the chaos around the campsite, followed by Gawain's fiery spears. One hound fell over while the others jumped into the road to seek prey. Other mountain men appeared out of the forest, breaking small trees and branches and kicking anything in their paths. Freya and Thansgar continued loosing shafts into the smoke as long as they could discern targets, which wasn't very long, the smoke getting thicker each moment, while Clough and Gon attacked the hound with axe and blade. And the elf killed one hound with a quick thrust through its breast as it leaped at him, while Gon kept another backed off with continuous swings of his axe, the large yellow teeth snapping just beyond reach.
Puny bugs.
With the other three mountain men in his wake, he bore down on Clough and Gon. They weren't expecting Ablui as the werebear dashed out from the shadows with all his weight and slammed into two of them, pulling them over. The third dog discovered Gawain's scent despite the thickening smoke of the spreading fire. Instinctively, it barked its discovery, inadvertently warning the enchanter, then lunged directly at him, teeth and claws bared. Unable to react effectively with his dagger, Gawain did his best to dodge the flying hound, but was hit and forced to roll with the impact. In the next instant, he was pinned underneath the beast and momentarily bound by its weight and four legs. The great head snuffled the invisible man beneath, then started nipping and biting. Fortunately, Gawain was inverted, his boots where the teeth were. He kicked upwards to deflect it, hoping to get enough room to maneuver, then stabbed his blade into a hind leg. The dog only persisted in biting the invisible legs, kicking at its face, successfully catching a boot in its teeth. As the powerful jaws clamped down on his leg, Gawain knew he would lose it if he didn't act fast. At the same instant, the smell of the animal's hot blood tingled his wear senses, and he had to resist the urge to shapeshift. a cat and dog fight might be too equally matched with an uncertain outcome. He thought quickly about dog fights he had seen. They tended to go for each other's necks in attempts to throttle each other. And he stabbed upwards into the beast's gut, hoping it would try to turn around, thus releasing his leg and momentarily taking its weight off of him. It worked. He left the blade there and rolled away at the first opportunity as the dog yowled and jumped, worsening its visceral wounds with every move. The enchanter watched with discomfort as he rubbed the deep bruises on his leg. He hated to prolong any creature's death, for the dog had only been acting as it had been trained and wasn't truly evil, yet he had been left no choice. Soon it fell over onto its side and twitched uncontrollably. Hearing the fighting out on the road, Gaewon was aware his friends might need help and acted as fast as he could. He stumbled over to the quivering beast, yanked out his dagger, slit its throat, then limped out to the road. What he saw there worried him.
Watch your left, Flayna.
Flayna and Thasgar now had swords out and were helping Clough and Gon hold back the remaining dog and two giants.
Easy.
A third giant was limping backward and shaking his fist. Avlun's hand-to-paw duel with the lead mountain man was not going well. The giant had shoved the werebear off of him, gotten hold of his cudgel, and was holding the ferocious ursanthrope at bay with wild swings of his weapon. Fitful light illuminated the battle, the scattered fires in the wood behind Gaewon spreading.
Abluwi!
Gaewon hoped the werebear would hear him. If he could get the priest to move out of the way, he could release an enchantment. But giants, bear, and dog were grunting and growling too loud for Abluwi to hear. Suddenly, the sound of many shafts cut through the air from behind where the mountain men stood in the road. Faces froze in shock and pain. One dropped his cudgel and fell forward to the dirt, his back sprouting more than 20 crossbow bolts. Upon seeing their leader fall, the other two dashed into the forest, leaving the third wounded one to hobble after. The last dog pelted away after his master. Behind where they had stood, more than 30 dwarves appeared out of the night, rushing up to see the aftermath, their numbers bristling with crossbows, short swords, axes, and shields.
Who battles these wormheads?
Gon replied in the dwarf clan words,
Ulan Foya, waylaid travelers.
Waylaid indeed. Who be your leader?
Gaewon limped forward.
Greenagant Gul, I am leader.
Gon's eyebrows went up in surprise as he stared at the enchanter.
I never knew Gaewon could speak the clan words.
The dwarf chief seemed mildly astonished but pleased and grinned with respect and camaraderie at this man who spoke the clan words. The rest of the group looked vaguely befuddled at the indecipherable conversation. Noting the keen edges and newly forged appearance of the weapons wielded by the dwarf company, and taking in the chief's garb, plate mail crafted for his small size, stout black boots, a gleaming helm emblazoned with the raven point insignia, and a tabard brocaded in silver and gold, with the forge's mark intertwined with a family coat of arms. An impressive outfit by any standard.
You are from Ravenpoint.
Our lad, our watch spied the fires. Going down?
He barked commands at his men, and in a flash, crossbows were replaced with shovels, and the entire company scattered off the road to spade dirt onto the flames that grew in the underbrush. While his men worked, the lead dwarf stepped up to Gaewon and offered his hand.
Can't have a forest fire run off the game or roast our meat before we're ready. The name's Yerst, Chieftain of the Ravenpoint Guard. From the looks of things, you had the grunts pretty well done in. Just thought we'd lend a hand.
Your intervention is appreciated, Chief Yerst. Despite appearances, we were in some difficulty. I'll have to admit I have my doubts as to whether or not we had them done in.
Didn't you know you were only a dragon length from the town? You could have made the gate just after dark.
We knew we were close, but not by how much. Your last roadstone is smashed.
Oh, really? Smashed?
He looked at the dead giant.
Not much can smash those stones except mountain men. They must have done it to keep you off track. Have to replace it quick or we'll worry other travelers.
We knew they were hunting us, and with night approaching, we didn't want to risk an ambush. So we laid a trap and waited.
During the entire conversation, Gawain could see Gon staring at him with disbelief. Nettled by the silent looks, he finally addressed him.
Gon, what's wrong? Is my hair on fire?
Maybe so. I didn't know you could speak the clan words.
This struck Gawain, for he had perceived nothing unusual by his ear.
But I can't.
For that matter, he couldn't speak much of anything except a few sentences of the elfin. He had never had much of a proficiency, or patience, for comprehending other languages. Enchant was complicated enough.
Huh.
Yerst gave him a queer look, then looked over Gawain for a moment.
Just winging it, eh? You do pretty good. From the looks of things, you could do well purchasing some weapons. Come into Ravenpoint, lad. We'll get you and your friends a hot supper and soft beds.
Gawain was too occupied with the concept of his speaking another language fluently and didn't think to explain that he preferred no other weapon aside from his dagger.
Thank you, Chief.
Chief, the fires are nearly out.
Save a couple of live brands, lad. We'll need them to start the pyre. Can't have these grunt carcasses stinking up the road and scaring off traders.
All this was done surprisingly quick, despite the dwarf's size. As they foraged for tinder, Yerst walked the length of the giant's corpse. By this time, Gawain's companions had collected themselves, fetched their horses, and assembled down the road toward the village. Gawain perceived Yerst's thoughts.
Are you sure you want to burn this mess? If the wind blows toward the village, you'll have quite a stench on your hands for a day or two.
Maybe not.
The chief removed a small pouch from his belt and sifted its contents in his palm.
I've wanted to try some of this powder. It should quicken the fire and have this mess reduced to ashes in no time.
Gawain suppressed his apprehension at seeing a layman handling what he considered highly unstable, dangerous fire powder.
Been using the stuff long?
Not really, no. A man came through town yesterday and traded this for some newly forged equipment. He said he'd run out of silver and this was all he had. He demonstrated with one of our forges, made the hearth heat faster, but they have to be careful with it. Nearly lost an apprentice when he dropped a whole handful into the coals. Stuff exploded and scattered lava rocks all over. I thought it might take care of this problem. Unless you've a better idea.
Cursing Calron for trading the lethal fire powder, exchanging one style of killing for another, Gawain touched a warding hand to Yerst's.
I've had experience with fire powder, Chief. Perhaps you should allow me to handle it.
By all means.
The chief eagerly handed the pouch over.
Call away your men.
Men!
The enchanter untied the pouch and inspected its contents. The fitful torchlight didn't make this an easy task, so he touched a bit to his tongue.
Cool and salty. Gods! This is pure nitre.
Is that good?
You certainly made a good deal. But fire powder is good only if you know how to use it. Like putting a sharp knife in a baby's hands.
He wanted to say, but didn't care to insult the chieftain.
Keep those torches away!
He began sprinkling the powder over the corpses. There was more than enough to do the job, but he decided he would do Yerst a favor and rid him of the entire pouchful by dumping the rest on the ground around the bodies. Once done, he brushed his hands clean and rejoined the chieftain, who was looking at him curiously.
Aren't you going to spark it, lad?
Yes.
Gawain drew himself up and limbered his fingers.
Ah,
Yurst now realized Gaewon's calling.
Conjuring some mage fire to get it burning.
In a manner of speaking, he was used to mages and their craft, frequently dealing with those who wanted help in forging charmed weapons. Quickly, he molded energy in his hands as he imagined the necessary ciphers for fire in his mind, felt the pulse of power expanding between his palms, then flung it into the pyre. Instantly, the corpses were consumed in a pillar of flame. The dwarves drew back several steps, familiar with the more common mage methods of summoning fire, pointing fingers, shouting mystic words, or sometimes tossing powder onto burning cinders. Yurst wondered just what sort of mage might this man be who spoke the clan words. He stared at the roaring flames, then at Gaewon, then at his friends.
Well, by me scruffy cat's tail, that's a bit of magic I've not seen before.
It wasn't magic.
Gaewon was occupied with his disbelief at the nitre powder. It had been more potent than he had expected. The corpses would indeed be ashes by morning, nitre normally burning fast and hot.
Not magic?
He's an enchanter.
Yurst scratched his head as he thought about this.
Sounds like my scruffy cat with different spots. Why don't we discuss it over a tankard of Trisk?
He repeated the invitation in common for the benefit of the others.
Come on inside for a tankard of Trisk. We'll have a talk.
Then called his company to order and escorted the travelers down the road and through the tall, torch-lit gates of Ravenpoint. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 20 are performed by Richard Hammer, Kevin Norris, Darcy Aradell, and H. the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com. On Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Atlas Mason, Sarah Chapman, Louise Humanoid, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Liber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by Mixkit of Victoria, Australia, freesound.org, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.